This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila.
And where is my fat checks? And this week's episode, we're going to talk about the movie All in This Tea. It was released in 2007. And it follows the exploits of David Lee Hoffman, who is a tea importer. So we watched it together, and then I rewatched it and took notes. So what was it about it that struck with you?
It was insane. It was a Netflix Watch It Now. For anybody who has Netflix, which is almost everybody now, you can probably find it to check it out. It was just the whole concept that this was filmed back around the turn of the century when he had really gotten his other tea importing company off the ground. And his struggle to deal with the Chinese bureaucracy to import tea from where he wanted to import it, that's what struck a chord with me.
Yeah, this was... It's funny because it's like... It's kind of like watching those old... newsreels from the 1950s where they talk about us having flying cars. And you're like, wow, how wrong were you?
Yeah.
And back in 1997, he was talking about how a loose leaf tea industry is dying and it's so hard to get tea out of China and it's so hard to get organic stuff because a lot of the farmers are producing for volume and not for quality. But the stuff that they drink themselves, they don't put fertilizers, chemical fertilizers and pesticides on. They save that for the stuff that they're going to sell to us, right? So it was kind of a, wow, that turned out pretty wrong, because you look at Republic of Tea, New Me Tea, you know, all these loose leaf tea places that have flourished.
Tenrin. Ethiopia. Well, then also you look at that and you have to wonder, honestly, I think he had a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
I think we got to see in the movie the genesis of the tea industry being able to re-explode to meet the demand that was starting to crop up in North America.
Right.
And I think his techniques had a lot to do with that demand, because he was able to provide in the where these companies and this demand grew from, which was the Dirty Hippie West Coast.
Yeah.
And I say that with all respect intended. He was able to give them the good tea, and people were able to develop a taste for it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they showed him, he would go to these places, and he'd grab a handful of tea from the bag, and he'd smell it, and he's like, no, I can smell the chemicals.
Yeah.
And he'd go to another bag of tea that looks the same to us, and he'd smell it, he's like, that's the good stuff, give me more of this, this is what I want.
Or, I'm keeping this for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And the funny thing is that he never even bothered learning Chinese. He actually always takes an interpreter with him, and this is a very deliberate thing, because he goes to so many different areas where they have so many different dialects, there is no way that he could possibly learn them all.
Yeah. There's literally hundreds of dialects in China.
Exactly.
Not
and especially the places where he's going.
Oh, yeah.
He's not going to the city at all. He's going directly to the farmers.
Mm-hmm.
And he started back after Kennedy was shot. He started hitchhiking around the world, and there's all these mugshots of him with, like, his vagrancy charges and everything. Yeah. Because he was literally this bearded hippie that just wandered around. He actually met the Dalai Lama.
Yeah. And drank tea with the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And how he started with his tea importing company was it just kind of happened and grew. He was bringing back tea for friends and family. They were like, oh, this is awesome. Try and get something else like this. Oh, I've got this new friend. She has to check it out, bring back some more. And it just kind of exponentially grew from that.
And I just have to say right now, interject, the set of cojones on this guy to bring back bags of dried leafy stuff imported into the country is huge. Because when I came back from China, I brought back a couple of bags of tea. I was gifted with two nice canisters of tea from the one area, and they were good. They weren't like, oh my god, amazing quality, but it was the best tea probably I've had in my life, next to the one type I had that one fellow was like, this is $100 a canister. It was a little tiny canister. But this was really good tea. Sheila and I had it for years and finally finished it. Never went stale either, because we stored it properly. Just cold, dry place, no air.
Yeah.
But I sweated bringing the stuff back in my suitcase, because it looks bad.
Other green leafy things that
are
not, you're not allowed to bring in.
It just looks bad, and I sweated the entire
time. Especially
because
it looks like the really good quality green leafy things that people want.
Yes. So getting that through customs and not having them give me a hassle, granted, pre 9/11 or a probe.
Yeah.
I admire his courage, and I'm just going to bring this stuff back for my friends until we finally decided to make it a legitimate business. So.
Yeah.
But as you were saying.
Oh, so that's where his business actually originally came from. And then following this, he's working to promote sustainable, environmentally sound farming. And to try try and show people that it's better to have a little bit of good quality stuff that you can sell for a lot mm-hmm. than to have bags and bags and bags of mediocre stuff to sell in the mass market.
It's all about profit margin. And
exactly.
Better profit margin for the higher quality tea.
And the thing that he was really pioneering, this was actually filmed in 1997. I don't know if I said that or not, but the film was released in 2007.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to promote the use of earthworms
yeah.
to make fertilizer. Because basically, whatever earthworms will eat, whatever comes out the back end
is good.
Good stuff. Good fertilizer.
Full of nitrates, I think.
Yeah, and he basically had, like, it showed his place in California, and he had a compost bin that was basically like a worm farm. That he had, like, this colony of earthworms that I guess he'd grab a bunch every now and then and throw them into his garden, you know?
Yeah.
And they'd just go hog wild.
Yeah, and also the stuff that comes out of that, the dirt that comes out of that colony, too, is really good fertilizer. It's good to put in with your planting mixture. But yeah, he got to go to a conference in China, and I think he was the only Westerner there.
Yeah.
That was all about sustainable farming and using natural fertilizers and everything. And that
Instead
was...
of using chemical pesticides and
yeah.
chemical fertilizers.
Late 90s, that was a total coup for him to be able to do that. So that
yeah.
was really impressive as well. But I also, the part in the movie that, again, struck a chord with me, besides him trying to deal with the bureaucracy, which we're going to touch on, is showing the people and the farms that he's going to get this tea, where it's literally, it is an art. They've been doing this for like 10 generations.
Yeah.
So they learn from when they're children how to pick the tea, how to separate the stem from the bud and the leaf. That's the good
yeah.
part to make the tea. And they're just sitting there in a basket separating it away. And their fingers are so delicate in doing this. And it's a second nature to them. So it's truly,
yeah.
it's a trade. It's an art. And then they show people that are in these tea factories that are producing the lower quality tea. And you just have the rows and rows of women sitting there with these baskets doing the same thing. But the quality's not the same because they haven't been doing it since they were children.
Yeah.
They were taught how to do it last week when they were hired.
Exactly.
And that, right there, that makes a difference.
Yeah, that was the oolong factor you were talking about.
Yeah.
Because the part that you actually pick, what I understand from the movie, everything that you're picking is under 10 days old. And you can only pick from a certain amount of time in the morning because then the sun kind of wilts the leaves on the bush in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
So you're picking them in the morning while they're plump. And you only pick about a pound a day. One person could pick a pound a day. And that's one of these people that are crazy, like, have the awesome tea-seeking fingers, I guess.
And that's a pound wet, by the way. It hasn't been dried yet.
Yeah.
Think of how much water gets lost in that process. And when we're talking about finished tea that's actually picked per day, it's got to be less than half a pound.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Sure. And it showed them with... They have these crazy setups where they've got this metal wok in set into, like, a mortar, like, brick oven almost. And they're feeding this little bamboo fire
mm-hmm.
in there underneath the wok. And the guy's just sitting there throwing handfuls of leaves and stirring them by hand to cure
oh,
the leaves.
Oh, the tea contest. Was that in that, or was that in the other thing we watched about China with the tea contest?
I think that was in the Wild China
okay.
that we were watching, but you can totally bring that up.
I was going to bring that up, too. They have, like, tea contests in China, this one region, and it was the master... You get to be, like, the master tea maker for that year or something for your batch of tea, and it's literally an art to be able to roast it and everything just right to bring the flavors out in the tea leaf and have it picked at the right time. And
because it's a total timing thing.
Mm-hmm.
If one thing's off, it can take the perfect leaves and... like, make them not live up to their potential,
mm-hmm.
or it can destroy the potential,
mm-hmm.
you know, or it can take something that's mediocre and make it amazing.
Mm-hmm. And that ties into this, that those guys that win this contest, and this is filmed many, many years later, when they win, the tea that they have goes for buko bucks.
Yeah.
To people like Mr. Hoffman, who are looking for the highest quality, non-pesticide-laced
yeah.
tea that is has been made properly. So that, I thought, was really neat, too. But anyway, back to All in This Tea.
The title All in This Tea actually comes from kind of like the terroir of the tea, because there's certain flavors, just like coffee.
Terroir.
Where it's grown.
Okay. Sorry.
It's like a flavor from that particular weather, from that particular soil, in that particular place on Earth, in that particular point in time.
So just like grapes for wine, how a grape
yeah.
is dependent on the region it's grown in to get a particular wine flavor, or for cigar leaves.
Right.
How Cuba produces a very distinct type of leaf because of the soil where it is.
And the conditions and everything. Yeah.
Exactly.
And you can tell if it's been a dry year or if it's been a wet year, it'll
mm-hmm.
change the flavor. the one line was, you know, when I'm drinking this, I'm not necessarily thinking about flavor notes. I'm thinking about a certain place. I'm walking down a path. It just rained that morning. There's fresh dew on the grass. It's still kind of misty out, and I can hear birds calling. That's all in this tea. So that's what the title actually came from.
I didn't pick up on that at all when I watched it.
I didn't either.
It was the rewatch.
It was the second time, yeah, that I watched it. Now we'll throw in some folklore here just because I'm such a trivia person. The other thing that Hoffman said was that tea is like living archaeology. What you're tasting, you can actually drink the same drink that the emperors drank.
Yeah.
You know, tea was originally brought to China from India. And apparently, according to legend, Odidharma was the first tea drinker. And what he did was, he was so tired of... he was frustrated with himself for falling asleep during meditation. So he peeled off his eyelids and threw them into the ground. And that's where the first tea bush sprang up. Yeah, that's kind
of
weird.
Okay, I just thought of haunting in Connecticut now.
Yeah. Speaking of eyelids. So that he'd stop falling asleep. And then tea was drank by different monks to stimulate the mind, but not give the body the jitters.
Like coffee.
Exactly.
Which, again, also makes me think of the one hypothesis from the coffee book I talked about last year, where...
We were an alcohol world before, and then when the Renaissance hit, we were a caffeinated world.
Well, it was right after the Renaissance, and we had, I forget what the name of the period is, Age of Enlightenment, thank you. And all of a sudden, there's all these great ideas coming out, and was it just, it was the right time and the right place? Or was it that all of this was happening in a lot of coffee houses, and was it because we stopped...
drinking a depressant,
exactly,
or a stimulant.
Our minds weren't clouded by a low-level haze all the time. Even drinking small beer, that will build up in your system after a while. Mm-hmm. And now we were drinking a stimulant, and that was all gone. So that similar thing, because you look at how China went through different periods of development, intellectually and industrially speaking.
Yeah.
Or technologically speaking, is really what I should go with. Industry didn't really happen.
Well, I'm thinking, like, whenever... if you look at writers and artists that were alcohol-fueled, it seems like they're a lot more imaginative, but very general and very loose. Whereas people that are, like, caffeine-fueled seem like they're more logical. I might be making a generalization here, but it's just a theory that you have a little bit more precision, and you have a little bit more clear idea of how everything fits together, rather than being... whimsical and sloppy.
I don't know, because the alcohol could just be what causes some of it for some of those artists. And whereas you meet somebody who's very logical, they become just as sloppy when they've been consuming alcohol as well. Mm. I admit my share of mathematicians that like to drink, and they're not always precise.
No, I'm just thinking of thought processes that are fueled by alcohol versus thought processes that were that are fueled by caffeine.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because alcohol.
If you take the same person and give them beer and a bunch of drawing supplies.
True.
And if you take somebody, the same person, and give them a bunch of coffee and give them a bunch of drawing supplies.
So they're still illogical then?
I'm saying that if they're on caffeine, everything they're going to be doing is going to be much more precise and anal.
Well, yeah, because they're not drunk.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But they're still going to be creating things if they're drunk. It's just going to be very
free-flowing. Which again goes back to the whole, did coffee have anything to do with the Enlightenment? And putting that into context of China, which had so many more technological advances before we did.
Very early on.
You just kind of have to wonder if having the
tea
as a drink, because you weren't forced to drink something containing alcohol all the time, if that had a little tiny bit to do with it. Not a lot of it, but just a little tiny bit. Maybe an extra 5 or 10% chance of it happening.
Well, and look at, too, in a more broad... if we're just going to talk about coffee and tea, look at the innovations of the Islamic world. Even before medieval times, Middle Ages, they had zero. We never had zero until the Muslims invented it, right? I wonder if it's because it was caffeine-fueled science rather than drunken science.
Well, they weren't really Muslims at the time, so that came about a little bit later. It was just being Arabic in general.
Okay, well, we'll
it was pre-Muslim world, yeah. Yeah. You know, it might be.
Because I'm thinking of it like...
But alcohol wasn't a taboo until Muhammad.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking during the Crusades, you much would rather have a Middle Eastern doctor working on you rather than a medieval doctor.
To a degree. That's a little bit of a stereotype, and that just comes from the one class I took in medieval medicine.
Mm-hmm. I know they had way more than
they were a lot
going
of advances,
on that was, than we had given credit for.
But a lot of the Western doctors were studying what they did as well and adopting it. So when it came down to having a Muslim or a Middle Eastern doctor versus a Western doctor, your odds would be pretty equal. as long as it was somebody who was fairly learned. And even then, that was no guarantee. There was a period of time where people, they were slowly abandoning, this would have been a much later period, they were slowly abandoning some of the folk medicine, mm-hmm. which now we're coming full circle back to and saying, actually, there's some decent little properties in these leaves that we need to take a look at, too.
Well, I'm talking about bleeding and humors.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not talking about the actual herbalism, which a lot of foods, and including tea, was originally a health tonic.
Yeah.
Originally, you drank it for the health properties of it. And
you
then
know,
people
like cocaine.
Yeah, exactly. And then people were like, you know what? I should just do this all the time. I'll bet I'll feel great.
You know, 100 years from now, we're going to find out cocaine is like a cure for like AIDS or something.
Right. We go into the one different kinds of tea that they were talking about. The pu'er tea.
Bah.
That was, it's an aged tea. It's the one tea that is meant to be aged to mature in flavor. They oxidize it, they ferment it, so it's a black tea. It's almost like an oolong. And the Tibetan lamas were originally the only people that drank it. And they have, like, hordes of it. It's like, can you imagine the wine cellar that the Vatican has?
Yeah.
So can you imagine the pu'er cellar that the lamas have? They were pressed into cakes and bricks, and
it was a very portable tea.
Yeah, exactly. Because you can't really carry a great big bag of leaves, but you can stack up a whole bunch of bricks of the compressed and dried leaves.
Well, you can carry a big bag of leaves, but then you get hassled by customs. Back to my one point.
True that. The other thing I wanted to talk about was Mr. Hoffman has a set on him because the last person to study tea in China was Robert Fortune, and the Chinese hated him because he dressed like a Chinese nobleman. He had
all
that
these... English guy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was like, I'm not going to say the original, because I'm sure it happened before that, but one of the original industrial espionage masters.
Oh, he's the guy that smuggled the plants out.
Yep.
Yeah.
So he's like, you know what? We hate that China has all the tea. Darn it. The English people deserve more tea. We shouldn't have to go all the way to China and pay their exorbitant fees. But we own India, so let's go and plant some tea there. So in the 1820s, in Assam, there was a wild tea plant that was discovered, and it was cultivated into black tea. In the 1840s was when Robert Fortune took the Chinese tea plants to
Darjeeling?
Darjeeling, yes. And planted them there and figured out that it could actually be crossbred with the Assam plant so that you could have awesome Chinese tea without having to go to China.
Fake
Chinese. Which really upset the Chinese.
I can see why.
Understandable.
Messing with their income stream. Not a good thing.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's pretty much all that I had for that, other than David Lee Hoffman. He's the master of drinking without getting drunk and figuring out how to pay, how much money to bring so that you can pay the taxes and the government and the bribes.
Yes. And he fought to get to go to directly to the farmers, because every place he would go, they'd want him to deal with the middlemen, the middle sellers of the tea that already had it in the warehouse. He said, no,
yeah.
I want to go to the farmers. And then, no, we don't do it that way. And he went through this, there's the one segment in the movie, and he just kept fighting with the guys, like, no, I want to go to the farms. Like, no, we don't do that here. No, we want to go to the farms.
Yeah.
You want me to buy your tea? I want to go see where it's grown. I want to meet these people.
Yeah.
So that was kind of neat, too, about his fight to get past all the bureaucracy and get right to the heart of it.
Right.
So it was really interesting.
It was. Hats off to him.
Yes.
He may have been the person that spawned the loose leaf tea revolution in the modern 21st century.
Or at least provided
the tea for it.
Yeah, he provided the means. I thought it was a really interesting movie. I really wanted to talk about it just because I'd never heard of it before. And as much as we're into all things Eastern and tea, for us to randomly stumble on this on Netflix and never have heard of it before, I thought it was something we needed to put out there and say, hey, check this out.
Yeah, definitely.
Cinematically speaking, it's a dense movie. You really have to concentrate. This is not like a sit down with a couple of beers and your buddies and watch kind of movie. This is when you're looking for something contemplative and serious.
Yes. Enjoy with a pot of green tea.
Exactly.
And then give a hiss at the end.
Anything else you want to add on that?
I don't think so. I think that's pretty much it.
Cool.
There's a lot of information packed into a short episode, but
yes,
hopefully somebody gets something from it.
A lot of sidetracks.
Everyone's going to think of the eyelid thing now. That's the only thing you take away from this. Remember that.
Eyelids. Tea comes from eyelids.
Bodhidharma.
Yes. Well, and they're also going to remember the caffeine-fueled conversation of, does alcohol make people creative, or does the alcohol make them creative? No, the alcohol makes them creative. Right. As we went in circles. This is Tracy.
And this is Sheila, and we are Spy Fat Chicks. Thanks for listening.
We hope you enjoyed the Spy Fat Chicks podcast. Please add us as a friend on MySpace and or Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. Please email your comments, questions, or suggestions to zweifatchicks@gmail.com. That's zweifatchicks@gmail.com. Our theme music is Hot Swing by Kevin MacLeod. Our podcasts, like Mr. MacLeod's music, are protected under a Creative Commons attribute copyright. You can make copies of our shows and share them with friends, but please make sure that credit is given. Once again, thank you for tuning in, and we hope you have a great day.